It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. In this hour adventure, later on we hear Escape, but right now it's the Tell It Again series from CBS, adapting Herman Melville's Moby Dick, first heard on June 13th, 1948.
Today, Moby Dick by Herman Melville, and we tell it again. His name was Ishmael. He was young, strong, and had the smell of the sea in his blood. He had everything an adventurer needs except for one thing, experience. But if he'd had that, he would never have opened the door of the Spouter Inn in New Bedford, Massachusetts. That night, many years ago, the sign above the inn creaked back and forth as the wind blew against it. And underneath the word Spouter Inn, he was able to make out another name in a dim light. Proprietor Peter Coffin.
Yes?
Oh, I didn't see you.
Well, you do now.
I'd like a room, if you please.
All filled up.
Oh, wait, surely you have a place for one more. I've traveled a long way and I'm very tired.
Run away from home, have you?
Why, I... No. No, of course not.
Ever been to sea?
Well, no.
Well, I can give you a bed in another man's room.
Oh, that's fine. I won't mind if he won't.
Come this way. He's a harpooner.
Oh, well, are you sure I won't be disturbing him?
No, don't think so. He might even like you. He's a native, but harmless. Just don't be frightened of him, son.
Well, I wouldn't want to...
Here we are. To the right there. Open the door.
But I...
Open the door.
Why, there's no one here.
He'll be back later. Went out trying to sell it.
I beg your pardon?
Come in. I said he's out. Went out to peddle it. But it's no use. Market's overcrowded now. You won't find a buyer. Just make yourself comfortable. Put your things there. Good night.
Excuse me, but...
Yes?
I thought there was a great demand for whalebone and oil and fish.
Didn't say there wasn't.
Oh, I thought you did. The native, you said he wouldn't be able to sell his catch if the market was overcrowded.
It is, for what he's selling.
Oh? Well, what is he trying to sell?
Heads.
Heads?
That's right. Good night.
Heads.
Ishmael undressed, climbed into bed, and pondered the words of the landlord. What kind of a man could this native be who sold heads? Well, he wasn't long in finding out, for just as he was about to fall asleep, the door burst open. And the native strode into the room. He was a massive figure of a man. His skin was a deep copper color, and each cheek was painted with three long yellow stripes. His head was bald except for a small pigtail that sprouted from the top of his skull. He wore no clothes except for a loincloth, and in his hand, he carried a head.
Hold there! Hold there!
It's only me, Ishmael.
Ishmael?
Yes, I'm your roommate. The landlord said I could sleep here. I won't disturb you, I hope.
Roommate? You're Quickwag roommate?
Yes, that's right.
Hold this.
What?
Hold. Quickwag light.
You mean the head?
Don't be afraid. Head no bite. Head dead. Roommate. Ishmael. Quickwag think he like you.
The head was a small, shriveled souvenir taken by Queequeg from a tribe of pygmies. It didn't look real and resembled a toy. So Ishmael soon lost his fear and distaste of it, as he did of Queequeg. In fact, by the time the sun rose the next morning, Ishmael and Queequeg had become fast friends.
Well, I see you two are getting along all right, eh?
Oh, yes, fine.
You're here, whaling ship in dock.
Whaling ship?
You all know, understand English?
Yes, I understood you. There's a whaling ship in dock, but I wouldn't advise it.
Queequeg, not ask for advice. Ask for information.
It's the Pequod.
Good. We eat. We go see Captain Pequod.
It ain't Captain Pequod, you native fool. It's the Pequod. And nobody but an idiot had put out with Old Thunder.
Old Thunder?
That's what they call him.
Old Thunder. Skipper of Pequod?
You got it right. And a worse skipper there ain't this side of Hades. He's a man with one leg and no soul.
What name this skipper, Old Thunder?
His name's Captain Ahab.
Well, we like see Old Thunder.
What? He means we want to see Captain Ahab.
Oh, you do you? What about?
Well, we want to put in with you.
Doing what?
Well, I can do most anything you need. And Queequeg here, he's a fine harpooner.
Harpooner? That native? What you call Queequeg? I call you a... All right. I ain't looking for trouble. But I can't use a native. I'd have a place for you, son. But you'll have to get rid of your friend.
But Queequeg's a good harpooner.
That I'll believe when I see it. Queequeg, sure. Hey, wait a minute. Come back here.
Queequeg, borrow a harpoon. What?
Hey, what's the crazy fool going to... Watch what you're doing with that harpoon.
Mister, see small star spot, end of deck.
Yes, I see it. But what do you think you're...
Queequeg, sure. You small star spot, eye of whale. What?
Bullseye, Queequeg, bullseye.
Well, I'll be it. All right. You're both signed on. I'm Starbuck, first mate. Come below, I'll show you your quarters.
Mr. Mate.
Well?
Queequeg, glass, look, see, Old Thunder.
What?
He means we've heard so much about Captain Ahab, we were wondering if he's around.
You two want to ship out on the Pequod or not?
Why, yes, certainly.
Then stop worrying about Captain Ahab. You do your business with me, Starbuck. You've got no business with the captain of the Pequod. Understand?
Yes, sir, of course.
All right, then. Come below.
The next day, the Pequod set sail for parts unknown. Ishmael was filled with the wonder of the sea, and his duties on board kept him too busy to worry about the mysterious Captain Ahab, or why the skipper hadn't been seen by the crew since they had left New Bedford. But Queequeg, having been signed on as a harpooner, had more time to think about the situation. And the more he thought, the more his native mind told him that there was something wrong, something very wrong.
What's the matter, Queequeg?
Queequeg, worried.
What about?
Queequeg, sail on much boat, banana, cargo, whaler. Always see captain. Captain always on bridge. Captain set course. Pequod not like that. No course. No captain. Queequeg, no like.
Well, maybe he's sick.
Queequeg, no like sail with sick captain. All right, you lovers. What are you mumbling about? Heave to, mister. Clear the deck.
Mr. Starbuck.
Well?
We see captain soon.
I told you before, you filthy swab. The captain's no concern of yours. Now forget it and get to work. Man the capstan. Heave to and spring your lovers, or I'll break your backbones. Now jump!
Days passed, then weeks, and still the Pequod sailed aimlessly through the still blue waters. The old sailors among the crew could tell that she had no set course, but they said nothing. Queequeg fumed and fretted, but received only curses and impatient mutterings from Starbuck whenever he dared mention the peculiar behavior of the ship. And the fact that none of them had ever seen the Pequod's captain. Then, one day, as Ishmael and Queequeg were standing near the bridge on deck, a sound familiar to whaling vessels greeted their ears.
Well, well. Now, quick work, get to work. Well, well.
Sabbath! God be blown!
In a flash, the deck of the Pequod was a mass of activity. Sailors ran to and fro, lowering small boats, selecting harpoons, and preparing for the inevitable order they knew must come. Lower away, get the whale. But in the midst of the activity, as the men were about to lower the boats, as Queequeg took his harpoon in hand, and as Ishmael's heart pounded with the thrill and excitement of his first catch, a tall, gaunt figure strode from the cabin and mounted the bridge. His eyes gleamed like fire, even in the bright sunlight. His skin was like parchment, old before its time. And in place of his right leg, he wore a stump, a peg leg, made of whalebone.
Mr. Starbuck?
Aye, sir.
What is this infernal racket?
It's the man, sir. They've sighted a whale.
A whale?
It's just a whale, sir. I've looked.
Stop them at once.
Aye, aye, sir.
All hands up! All hands! You hear me? All hands, I said, you lovers!
Aye, sir, what now?
I will speak to them.
Avast, now! The captain has something to say!
Men, you see this? It's a priceless Spanish gold piece. It goes to the first one of you that sights a certain whale in these waters.
I sighted the whale, Captain. I sighted it off Sabbath just now.
I am not interested in the whale you sighted. He's black, black and ugly like all other whales, and as valuable. This piece is for the man who sights a white whale. Hear me well. It's a white whale we're after. One whale. One killer whale. T'was he that brought me to this dead stump I stand on now. T'was he took me leg. I care not for other whales, the royal of bone. I want a white whale. And I'll chase him round Good Hope, round the Horn and the Norway Maelstrom. I'll chase him through the flames of Hades and all the tortures of the cursed until he spouts black blood and rolls on his back. The white whale, men! That's what you've shipped for! Moby Dick!
The worst. Their captain was the legendary Old Thunder, Captain Ahab, a madman who years before had lost his leg to a white whale called Moby Dick by those who pursued him. This was no ordinary voyage to obtain oil and bone. This was a hunt that could result only in the death of Moby Dick or a watery grave for the crew of the Pequod.
Queequeg.
Huh? Why you not sleep, Ishmael? You'll be dead on your feet tomorrow.
We'll all be dead unless someone can talk the captain out of this wild chase. We've been gone for 6 months now. The hold is leaking, provisions are scarce. The crew's in a nasty mood, Queequeg. I heard them talking.
Queequeg, no. Nothing to do.
But if someone could only get to Captain Ahab and talk to him.
Captain, madman. Think only of Queequeg no have word.
Revenge?
Revenge. Revenge on whale. Not right. Whale no ask be killed. Captain hunt whale. Moby Dick too smart.
It's the men I'm worried about, Queequeg. If Ahab doesn't let them hunt other whales, get some oil in the hold, or turn about for home, there's no telling what they'll do.
Men do nothing. Men, sailors, take orders. You sleep now.
But Queequeg was wrong. The men were in a nasty mood. They mumbled among themselves and plotted and planned. They knew where the arms and ammunition were hidden, and they resolved to get their hands on it. Inevitably, word of the plot came to the attention of Starbuck, the first mate.
Aye!
Excuse me, Captain.
Yes, Starbuck. Any news? Have you sighted him?
No, sir. I came to warn you.
What was that?
I came to tell you, sir, that unless you put about for home, or turn this into a normal trip, hunt for a whale, any whale, put some oil in the hold, give the men some reason for going on, you'll have a mutiny on your hands.
Oh. Well, thank you, Mr. Starbuck. I'm grateful for your concern, and I'll take it that you've done your duty as you saw it.
Aye.
Now that you've done it, get back to your work.
But, Captain...
Get back! Mutiny, is it? I've spent 10 years and come 100,000 miles to get that monster. You think I'll turn back now?
But the men...
The men! Let them stand on deck and out-yell the typhoons! Let their hunger gnaw at their bellies and their skin shrivel and die as mine has! You think I care about the men? Now get on deck, you pirate, or I'll blast you between the eyes with this musket!
Aye, aye, sir.
Far from changing the captain's mood, Starbuck's plea only served to spur him on. The following day, Ahab appeared on the bridge himself and never left it. He ate, drank, and half-dozed from his position of vantage and treated his men as if they were scum underfoot. On and on the Pequod sailed deeper into the Pacific, a wild chase such as the passing waters had never before known. Rolling and churning like a thing alive, the ship plowed through a raging sea, driven by a maniac who thought only of revenge. Revenge against a white whale.
Queequeg.
What?
Starbuck tried to talk to the captain and it didn't help.
No help. Nothing help. Nothing but kill white whale.
But we might go on like this for years. Someone's got to make
him. Ishmael! Ishmael! Where you go? No! Ishmael, come back!
Captain Ahab.
Who is it?
My name is Ishmael, sir. I'm one of the hands.
Hands? What do you mean coming on the bridge? Mutiny? Get off before...
No, sir. No mutiny. I'm not armed. I came to talk to you, sir.
What do you want?
I don't want anything, sir. I just wanted to talk to you.
Talk to me?
Yes, sir.
Come here. Come closer in the light. So I can see you. What? Well, you're a boy.
Yes, sir. By your measurements, I suppose I am. But I have a great love for the sea. And for anyone as kind and good and wise as you.
Kind? Good? Wise?
Yes, sir. All my life, I've dreamed of going to sea. It's my ambition to have a boat of my own and sail her over the world. Oh, you must have had a wonderful life, Captain.
A wonderful life? It's been... It was a wonderful life for a time. My family used to wait for me on the dock when I sailed into port with a hold full of oil and a rich cargo.
Your family?
Aye. My wife and me. I'll have no more of this. Get off the bridge.
Don't you see, Captain? It was a good life, a wonderful life, until you became obsessed with this wild desire for revenge.
I'll have you thrown.
Don't do it, Captain. Turn back now before it's too late. Or let us hunt whale, any whale. Fill the hold with oil, rich, good oil, and return home as you used to with a fine cargo. Your wife and child must be waiting for you.
My wife and child are dead.
Dead?
From the moment I swore to kill Moby Dick, I put everything else out of my mind. My wife, my child, they turned against me.
No, it was you turned against them. They're likely back in New Bedford now waiting for you.
Waiting for me.
Many men have known adversity, lost arms and legs, fought all their lives to achieve one thing and died unhappy. Is it worth it?
My wife.
Why not turn back? We'll find many whales on the return voyage.
My son.
We'll fill the hold with oil and lower sail in New Bedford, happy, successful men.
But I... What's that?
A whale. We can begin now.
I told them never to call unless they sighted a white whale.
The men are over-anxious.
Archibald! White whale of Saber!
White whale. Oh, white whale.
Captain, no!
A white whale!
Ahab rushed from the bridge to investigate the alarm. The lookout had not called over anxiously. But there, not a thousand yards from the ship, a whale spouted its lungs into the cold night air. And it was white. White as the driven snow. Captain Ahab had found Moby Dick. At last.
Down, topgallant sails. Stand by with three boats. This is Starbuck.
Aye, sir.
Stay on board. Keep the ship.
Aye, sir.
Lower away! Blast the lower away!
Ishmael, Queequeg, three other members of the crew, and Captain Ahab lowered themselves in a small boat and rowed toward the great white hulk of Moby Dick. The whaleboat shot through the stinging sea, propelled by a tormented crew, urged on by a demented captain who now saw victory within his grasp.
Steady! Steady on the helm!
Queequeg.
What?
Look at Captain Ahab's face.
You talk too much.
Captain Ahab stood in the boat like a man turned to stone. He clutched his harpoon and watched the monstrous white body of the whale as it turned the sea in front of the small boat. Queequeg stood up and raised his own harpoon. But the captain turned on him with the fury of a maniac.
No! I'll have him. I'll have him with my own hand.
Queequeg, sure. Queequeg, throw straight and sure.
Sit down. Down, I say. Have you waited 100 years for this moment? Have you lived, slept, breathed, eaten, and drunk the thought of having that beast before you? Down, I say. Closer, closer, Roman. 100 English pounds if you row me within striking distance.
For 3 days, the men rowed until the muscles of their arms stood out like great ropes, sinews of steel glistening in the sun. Closer and closer they approached the white beast whose bulk filled the sky. The heavens opened as if in torment, and the sound of thunder echoed the roar of the pursued whale. Ahab placed the stump that was once a good right leg on the bow of the boat. His right arm drew back, the harpoon poised, but for a moment, and then he threw. Straight and through, the harpoon sailed through the air and buried itself deep in the white whale. The infuriated animal rose up into the air, then dove into the sea. The slack of the harpoon rope uncoiled from the boat, rolled toward the bow, and curled around the captain's neck like a snake.
Captain! Captain Ahab!
The captain clutched at his throat and went overboard.
He's coming around now. Here, drink this.
What?
You're on the Rachel, schooner out of New Bedford. You're lucky to be alive. Feel like talking?
Yes, I think so.
We saw a ship go down. Were you from it?
Yeah.
Chasing a whale?
Yes, a white whale.
That's right. He upset a small boat, then turned on the schooner, attacked her. Looked like all hands were lost, except you.
All hands? Queequeg?
Who?
Are you certain all hands were lost?
Nothing but a lot of broken wood out there now. We searched for hours.
And Captain Ahab?
Ahab? Oh, it was the Pequod. So he finally found Moby Dick.
Yes, he found him. It would have been much better if he hadn't.
Ishmael was saved and returned to New Bedford by the schooner Rachel. In later years, he became a successful whaler and captain of his own ship. And he often returned to the scene of his first encounter with Moby Dick. Not to hunt the white whale, who was never seen again. But to think and ponder over the fate of Captain Ahab, his friend Queequeg, and the rest of the crew of the ill-fated Pequod, all he ever found were small birds that flew screaming over the endless reaches of the ocean and the great shroud of the sea rolling on, as it has since the beginning of time.
Tell It Again on Tuned to Yesterday from June 13th, 1948 on CBS. That would be the seventh of about nine adaptations of Herman Melville's story on air during its golden age. A couple of series, like the Columbia Workshop, split it up into two parts, while the World's Greatest Novels series took a month to adapt the story over four episodes in January of 1947. You are listening to An Hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Escape from July 21st, 1950 on CBS. It's the Bud Nelson story, Yellow Wake.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to an old-time whaling ship in the Pacific, and the story of the desperation and murderous violence of the men who sailed her, as Bud Nelson tells it in his exciting tale, Yellow Wake. Panama. Great chests of gold. The end of Sanford's rainbow. Stupid Sanford. Whiskey loose Sanford. And he put it right in my hand. Aye. His boast of an ancient book and a chart of buried treasure reeked of whiskey. Till he flashed that poke of pieces of eight in the San Francisco saloon, and I took care of the rest. There was no time before I was walking up the gangplank of his ship, the whaling vessel Congo Queen, knocking on the door of the captain's cabin.
Who's there?
Captain Thixton.
Aye. What is this? Fine watch I have that lets strangers board without shelling.
Maybe your anchor watch is a little loose, Captain, but I'll tighten it. My name's Love, Jonas Love.
Love, is it? What's your business aboard?
I'm your new first mate.
Where's Sanford?
He won't be coming back.
Sanford jumped ship? I don't believe it.
Jumping for dead, Captain. Shot, sir. Shot in a brawl.
Aye, whiskey, no doubt. I'd warned him. It had to happen someday. You were a friend?
For a time. Whiskey makes all men friends. Or enemies. I shot him.
You shot him? You shoot my mate and you got the sand to come here telling me about it?
I shot him in the smoke of his own gun, Captain. In San Francisco, that's a fair contest. I want his job.
You want his job, eh? You kill a man and ask for his job. What sort do you take me for that I'd take you on in the light of what you tell me?
For an intelligent man, Captain. One who won't pass up a chance to take on a better man than Sanford. You won't find another qualified mate on the California coast.
You got a good deal of talk, Mr. Love, but talk don't run a whaler.
A ship's a ship, sir, whether she runs whale oil or slaves.
Well, now you want to change the diggings. Where's your papers?
Papers don't run a vessel anymore and talk. Here, you'll find I speak the truth.
Well, maybe we can come to terms. Where's your gear?
Sanford won't need his.
What? Mr. Love, you've gotten on common gall. You kill a man, ask for his job, and now you take his very worldly possessions. I scarce think you'd stop at his wife.
Did he have one?
Well, it's a fair thing he didn't. You're a heartless man, Mr. Love, and I don't admire you for it. But it takes a heartless man to run this crew. I dare say there's worse ones on board. Get your men in hand, Mr. Love. We sail in half the hour. South's the course.
All hands on deck. Bear a hand below there. Starboard watch, hand the captain. port. Stand by to make sail. Lively now, men. And sail!
The Congo Queen was 300 tons between her jibs and her spanker and fleece in the teeth of the wind. A three-masted ship with canvas five high and the smell of her trade and her wood. I beat her to windward, cleared the bay, turned her south, and took a fresh wind over her stern, trimmed and sailing free for the end of Sanford's rainbow. Sanford. His berth was mine, the key to his sea chest hung from my neck. Secure inside his iron-bound chest was the proof of his drunken boast. Notes. More coins, green with age, a leather-bound book, and a parchment chart of Spanish legend. All I lacked was the name of the men who were in it with him. But I knew they'd show themselves soon enough. They'd be the ones who hated me most. Meantime, I had the whaling trade to learn. My life to guard against unknown men and a new captain to please. I joined Captain Thixton at the wheel.
I've been expecting you, Mr. Love.
Aye, sir.
Belay the formality, man. Respect is not in your nature.
You're right, Captain. And wrong. What's our destination?
Well, you might as well know you're not just my first officer. You're a confessed killer, and this is the high seas. One false step, and you're my prisoner. The matter is closed.
Closed it is, but not locked, sir. Our destination, Captain.
You go as far as your behavior takes you. We, the Queen, and the rest of my crew hail New Bedford in time. First the horn and the 60 latitudes, God willing.
60 latitudes, huh? Ice, then.
Aye, ice. But also whales, many and big. Sperm, blues, humpback. We should fill quick with luck. You'll see, Mr. Love. Secure the watch.
Aye, sir.
From now on, it's watch and watch. Four and four. Keep them moving smart. Tired men don't make trouble. That includes you, Mr. Love.
Watch and watch. Four and four it is, sir. She was a tight ship under Thixton. Still, I added my bit to the squeeze. I drove the crew hard, made them hate my guts, and spit at my back. They left me alone, and that's what I wanted. Kept my cabin secure inside or out while I fit Sanford's plan with my own. Oh, how the fool could have waited, I'll never know. The cache of gold was described in his notes. He'd been to the site from the Caribbean site, yet he sailed halfway around the world because he needed four men. Four men who were on board. Four men who would kill to put hand to my book and my chart. Well, we were fast hauling south. Had to tempt them to show their hand. The bait was the book with some pages cut out, a false rolled chart and an open hatch. We were in Mexican waters, sailing hard on the wind. I was in my hammock, a tired dog, and sleep was a fitful thing. Hold there. Hold in your tracks, you thieving ape. I groped like a fool for my pistol, and my man got away in the night. He'd come to open Sanford's chest. Next time, he'd come to kill. Another week passed while I studied the crew. Four men and 30, all keeping their thoughts in their beards. Some were mean, some were meek, some mutinous, some too willing in their work. Under four of those beards were Sanford's men. Another 2 days, and Lady Luck sent me to my quarters in the middle of the day. I needed to fill my pipe. Johnson, what brings you to my quarters?
Mr. Love, sir, I was just putting things in order.
I see. Now, come on. Get up on your feet and talk. Come on up. Now, what are you looking for, Johnson?
What
are you hiding in your shirt?
It's just a book, sir.
Just a book it is, huh? Give it to me. Just a book for certain. And what else? What else in your shirt? A land chart of Panama, is it? You read maps, too, huh, Johnson?
I was just...
Save the lies, Johnson. You're looking for Sanford's secret.
No.
You might as well know that it's mine now. I know you were in it with Sanford.
In with Sanford, Mr. Love? I don't follow.
You will if you hope to make any good from Sanford's plan. Aye, you'll follow me, and the other three will, too.
Oh, you're talking in riddles, man.
Riddles, is it, huh? Well, you took the bait good, Johnson. I've been expecting you to come prowling. I set the bait, and you took it. But it's wrong, Johnson. Here. Here's the pages that tell the story, Johnson. Read them.
I don't read, sir. Tannehill, he reads, sir.
I'll read it to you, but listen well. Peleg Sanford, 1838. It says right here in his own handwriting. Now listen to this. The name of the book, Sir Francis Drake Revived. Calling upon this dull and effeminate age to follow his noble steps for gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty thought, isn't it, Johnson?
Aye, it's a haunting story, I'm told. Tannehill was to read it to me on wages, sir.
Save the lies, Johnson. Just listen to this, where Sanford marked. Now listen. He keepeth 100 slaves at least in the mines, each slave being bound to bring in daily clear gain, all charges deducted, 3 pesos of gold for himself and 2 for his women.
Mm.
It goes on to say, Johnson, that the daily haul, daily, mind you, was 1,600 pounds sterling. Translated, that's roughly $50,000 every day.
Well.
Now listen. Which he keepeth in certain great chests of 2 feet deep, 3 broad, and 4 long. Just think of it, Johnson. Caskets full of gold.
Hmm.
Now, you were in with Sanford, Johnson. What does this mean to us?
Oh, to us? I don't understand, sir. It's just a tale to amuse. That's all I wanted, sir. The hours are long in the forecastle, sir.
That's enough of your simpering, Johnson. Now, who are the others? It's your boat crew, isn't it? Tannehill, Bixby, and Alcott?
Why, you call their names with your dying breath.
Be sensible now, man. I'm willing to put in with you. You need a leader, and I need men. And I hold the map and the book. When you're ready to talk sense, fetch your men here. Now shove off.
Aye, Mr. Love, I'll shove off.
And Johnson, I'll kill the man on sight I catch near my quarters. Is that clear?
Aye, Mr. Love. We know killing ourselves. You may not see the light of another day.
Let Johnson go, because I needed him. I needed his men to be my crew, to sail a ship, to fight a jungle, to move a mine. I thought I could wait till they came to me, but the devil's bait is a gilded hook. When it catches your flesh, you can't shake it loose. So I read and reread and traced and retraced in my mind, and it grew and it grew and it grew, and it said, gold. Well, we were south of Mexico, and time was growing short. I went to Johnson on deck and took a desperate move. Johnson?
Aye, sir.
This is your last chance. Show up tonight with your men, or I pick my own and leave you out.
Now, don't be a fool. You'll kill it for all of us.
All but me, Johnson.
Well, I'll take you in if it's all right with my crew, my men.
Your crew, huh? Your boat crew. Just as I thought. Do I use yours or get my own?
We'll talk it out.
I'm losing my patience, Johnson. Bring your men to my cabin at 8 bells, or I get my own.
If the men agree, we'll be there at 8 bells.
Long chance, but it worked. And at 8 bells, they came to my cabin. Johnson, Tannehill, Bixby, and Alcott.
Here we are, Mr. Love.
Come in. Keep quiet.
You hear me?
All right, belay the talk. Now gather around the charts. Now, there's one point I want clear. I'm giving orders, and they're not going to be mislaid. I understand, nobody else. Any man who doesn't like it can talk up now.
Mr. Love, we're taking you in.
You're wrong, Johnson. As Sanford's, legal heir, I've got 9 points of the law right here on this table, this map, and this book, and the know-how.
He's right. Stow the gripes, Johnson. We need a man with learning. How about it, men?
Yeah. All right, that's settled. Understand, Johnson? All right, close in on this chart.
Oh, yeah.
I'll show you where Sanford was wrong. Now here, right here, was our position at the noon site. We're approximately 12 degrees, 30 minutes north by 82 degrees, 40 minutes west. See where that puts us? Not over 4 degrees off the coast of Panama, you see?
Aye, man, but you still got to round the horn.
The map from the other side.
Sure, the Spanish chart shows a bearing from the Caribbean side. But look, carry that bearing on across Panama into the Pacific. Now look where we are.
Oh, we ain't a day away.
Then we don't have to round the horn.
Sanford never thought of that.
No, we don't have to go through with any whaling. Look, between these two mountains is a saddle. That's the mine. The bulk of the treasure is shown on the Spaniard's map right here. At the highest point in this defile.
Boy, that ain't a day's march overland.
Right. We can forget whaling. We don't have to round the horn, and this side fits my plan much better.
What is your plan about the boats and all?
Boats be hanged. I say, take the ship.
What are you talking about, man?
Mutiny?
Call it what you want. This half of the world won't be a healthy place for any of us. I say, take the ship, get the gold, and head southeast.
Yeah.
Lands, big lands, new lands, and gold talks and any of them.
You got a good opinion of yourself, love. We're 5 against 25. 26, counting the captain. We can't take ship.
You're wrong, Johnson. You forget we're whalesmen. We've seen whales every day lately. The order was given 5 boats out after whales would take care of 25 men.
The captain won't take whale till we're south of the Horn. He'll never give the order.
That's the first time you've been right, Johnson. He won't give the order, but I will. 5 boats out, take care of 25 men, and I'll see that it's none of us. 5 boats with salt in their water breakers, and no ship to come home to. Do you follow me? The current will take them to sea. From there on, it's Davy Jones' worry. We get the gold, head south, scuttle the Queen, and as far as everybody knows, all hands are lost. Then it's every man to his own pleasure, with plenty of gold to buy it.
I say we got the right man to lead us.
My all's in with him.
He is a smart one.
Before another night falls, men, we'll have us a ship. In a week, we'll have gold for ballast, enough to buy us a kingdom. Now break it up quiet and mind your actions. As far as Thixton's concerned, there's nothing changed. And I'll still flog the man that fouls an order. Now lay down to quarters, sharp and quiet. I'll pass the word when the time comes. All we need is a whale, men. One whale and the ship is ours. It was a neat plan and it carried fair. The watch changed. Day broke gray. Johnson was at the helm. Bigsby stood lookout high in the fort of gallant yards, all on orders of Jonas Love. Aye, Captain Thixton was lashed in his bunk. I saved him to kill him with the loss of his ship. The proud Captain Thixton, a prisoner of Captain Love. For now, we were whalesmen in search of a whale, any whale. It was watch and wait and watch. And...
Lay
to the helm!
Aye, sir!
Bring her up!
Up!
And aboard! Hurry now! Bear ahead!
Oh, clockwork, love. That's what it is. I've got to hand it to you.
Did you attend to my orders, Johnson, about the water breakers?
And I'd like to see the face of the first thirsty man. I gave him side meat, too. Good salt hogside to whet their thirst.
They won't last 2 weeks. They're picked up before. It won't make any difference to
them. All we need is a jolly roger from our royal yards, love.
Not quite, Johnson. Thixton's still with us. Donahue.
Aye, sir. Carried fair, sir.
You got your knife, Donahue. Thixton's tied in his cabin. Make it fast and sure.
Aye, sir. Fast and sure it is.
Can I bring her about, love?
You'll bring her about when I tell you to, Johnson, and you'll belay the mister when I tell you to, not before. Is that understood?
Aye.
Well, that's it. Bring her about, Johnson. East by south, steady as you go. Our next step is Panama, man. Golden Panama.
It'll pay you to know, love. Now all our stations is equal. It's 4-1 against you. And all of us feels the same.
Johnson, it'll pay you to know that the man who crosses me cuts those odds by one. Now fill out on your course. The wind took us east and the current went west, carrying before it the crew of the Queen. 5 drifting whaleboats of hopeless men lay at our stern. Our bow, like a finger, points to fortune's door, Panama. A land green-black with tropic growth and our treasure cradled in a mountain nest on our backbone. I put into fair anchorage in the lee of a point, paid off the hook and called my men. We ride out tonight here in this bay, men. Well, there she is, right up the mountain. The low point between those two peaks.
We still some daylight, love. I say move now.
You'll do no saying, Johnson. We move now right enough, but we'll do it on board. We'll provision the whaleboat for 10 days.
Ten days? Why, it scarce looks a league.
That it does, Tannehill, but it's a stormy course. That's jungle growth. We'll have to fight it all the way to the top. And we'll have no more crossing. Bigsby, look at provisions. Load the whaleboat. Tannehill and Alcott, break out the forge and fashion knives from flensing tools. Make them short in the handle and keen on the edge. You 3 men staying aboard, you'll take up the work till me and Johnson cast off. We'll need our strength.
Us staying aboard?
You take us for fools.
You'll stay aboard. That's an order. The man who thinks different, step up and speak.
You got the map, Mr. Love. The men don't like it that way. Well, what say you, men?
It ain't fair.
What's to keep you from going straight out the other side?
Yes, how do we know you're coming back?
Hold it. Aye, I've got the map. You're right. It's not fair that one man should have it. Tannehill, give me your knife.
Aye, sir.
You men don't trust me. You do trust Johnson. That's very well. So? Here, Johnson. Half for you, half for me. Now, does that satisfy you?
Aye.
Johnson's for us, fair enough. But you'd better come back. We'll follow you to the gates of hell if you don't.
It's fools who'd leave a ship unmanned. You'll get your share when we open the trail, Johnson and me. All right, now, turn to. Bear a hand. There's a fortune waiting the dawn. The fools. Simple, arrogant fools. And Johnson, too. Content with a worthless half of a map. Landmarks in plain sight, the last and main bearings stowed safe in my head. Every bearing and distance to the final pace memorized from 1,000 readings. Now to find the starting point. The rock with a face in Sanford's notes. Certain great chests of 2 feet deep, 3 broad and 4 long. Ponderous heavy. A wall of jungle to cut. I needed these fools. Even Johnson, for a time. Jungle. Lush, rich, gentle. It's a trap. A slimy, stinking, creeping green trap. Hold up, Johnson. Fetch up the water. The bugs. The heat. Green snare. Take the lead, Johnson.
No
man can keep this up.
I say belay it and rest. We need our strength.
Move on, Johnson. We've hacked half a day and we're not a cable's length from the sea. Take the lead.
Well, not last if we hold this pace. Look at the blasted insects. They hang in clouds. I say make camp. Likely tomorrow we'll get our second wind.
We'll get it on the move, Johnson. There's still 3 hours of day. Now take the lead and swing that knife. 5 killing days, it was hack, slash, hack. Move up the gear, creep on at a tortoise pace. The 6th day, the mountain fanned out on our course, and we rose above that green wall of jungle, and we could see the sea. The masts of the Queen waved gently, not 4 leagues down the slope. The sea breeze caught us and cooled our brow. And the jungle's web thinned, and we rested. We ate and we smoked.
We've passed the worst of it.
Another day at the most, Johnson.
No more.
You look bad, Johnson. Too much for you?
There's a powerful gripe in my back.
Don't be feeling sorry for yourself. I don't feel scorn-rig myself. Now take up your gear.
No.
We're moving on.
I can't move on.
You want gold, don't you, Johnson? Fall and you're rotting your tracks. There's more for the rest of us. Now move out.
No.
Nothing's stopping me now. Great bearded Johnson with the strength of 2 men. He spent his strength with harboring hate, and he fell to blithering. His big, bloody eyes cast up the trail. Useless he was. Weak and out of his mind.
Chop the lines. She's sounding. She's sounding.
What is it, Johnson? You're drooling black.
She'd get 1,000 barrels if I dropped, sir. Sperm whale. I've seen it with my own 2 eyes.
Johnson, do you know me, man?
Aye. Captain Thixton.
Yeah. You're through, Johnson. I'm moving on. The rock's in sight. I've no time for you now. That's due south 50 paces to such a point as... But there... There! It's the cave! Johnson's the cave! Sanford's cave, Johnson! My cave! I found it! It's here. Great chests of gold! Johnson, we found it! Chests of it, Johnson! Johnson. Look, Johnson. I brought back a handful. Gold. Johnson, look.
Lord of mercy. Dead he is. Dead of the fever. And yellow as gold. His face, his hands, all yellow like gold. Oh, my hands. No. No, it's not the blight like Johnson. It's just gold dust. It'll wash off. It's not the blight. My hands, my limbs, it don't wash off. No. No, no!
It's the devil's bait on the gilded hook. This fever's the devil's breath. I can feel it now. Boiling out my bile, painting me gold. It'll cook out my soul and leave me poor. This fever, this devil's yellow blight.
Escape was produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight has presented Yellow Wake by Bud Nelson.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 21st, 1950 on CBS. And so ends this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.